Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening. That was the Union of Time Thieves, and you heard certain songs. Jim Noir with All Right, Friends of Friends featuring Strange Loop, Wouldn't It Be Nice, Alan Kingdom's Goat, Matthew David with Gold Rope, which was a Rolling Stones flip. Mr. Bungle with Vanity Fair, Cassette Boy with three tracks, The Kickabout, Bring Back Cloaks, and The Legend of the Swedish Galleon. This is Becky, Sudden Radio Project is suddenly coming into your ear holes. Have a good night.
How are we now?
That's better.
It's better, but not great. No. How about now?
Oh, yeah. That's I got
better.
It now.
That's better.
Are we good?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
John?
Yeah?
Are you there?
I think
John,
I'm there.
Come in, John. Are you there?
Yes, okay. I'm here.
Okay. Ow. Let's go.
Deborah's definitely there. Am I here? Yeah. Okay.
Welcome to the Sudden Radio Project, Rated X.
I love you.
I love you too.
I love you three.
I love you four.
I love you five.
I love you six.
I love you seven.
I love you eight.
I love you nine.
Hi, how are you?
I love you. I love you 10.
I love you 2. I love you 11.
You look very nice.
I love
nice.
You 4.
Do you come here often?
I love you 12.
Friend of a friend.
I love you 6.
Thanks for responding to my personal ad.
I love you 13. I love you 8.
Can I buy you a drink?
Do I know you? Do you want to go steady?
I love you 15.
I'm the new assistant manager.
I'm a single white male.
Do you want to meet for coffee?
I love you 16.
Great party, huh?
I love you 16.
I love you 17.
I love you 18.
Will you marry me?
I love you 18.
I love you 22. I love you 19.
I love you 24.
I didn't catch your name.
I love you 8.
I love you
26. I love you 28.
I love you 16.
I love you 28. Candlelight dinners.
I got divorced last year.
I love you 21.
I used to look down on online dating.
I love you 32. I love you 120. I love you 22.
I love you 256.
Happy anniversary, honey.
I love you
3. I'm going to get an abortion.
I love you 500.
Let's climb the back seat.
I love you 38.
I love you 1.
I love you 24. I love you 40. I love you 2048.
I love you 4096.
I love you 26. I love you 8,192.
You're so easy to talk to.
I love you 27. I love you 16,384.
Do I know you?
Cecilia, tell me what you do again.
You stand in line here, Eric, with the patience of, let's say, a 10-year-old. You order your food and then find a table. They'll give you a number and bring your food when it's ready. What is up with you? Are you, like, autistic or something?
No, I have to go to the bathroom.
All right, they have a key at the counter. You have to go through the back door there. The restaurant shares bathrooms with two other offices on this floor.
Okay. I gotta go now. If they, by some fucking miracle, get to us before I get back, I want the pasta with the nut pesto and a glass of the Merlot, the kind on the board.
All right.
Hello?
Hi, Dana.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. You?
Good. I've been wanting to talk to you.
So, what's up?
Did you get my message?
Uh-huh.
You did?
Uh-huh.
And?
Well, alrighty then.
What?
That's fine. Just fine.
John.
Go right ahead. Just go for it.
You're not communicating.
You picked a great time, you know.
Excuse me?
Just perfect.
What did you say?
Just perfect.
Now look, I...
No, you listen to me.
No, you... No.
Look.
Okay, now
look,
wait.
Okay, now I'm to...
Hey, now, don't.
May I speak, please?
Sure, you talk, I'll listen.
I cannot stand the way you purposefully pick fights with me when I am out in a public place so you can make me look like an imbecile in front of everybody.
Well, I resent the way that you always put the blame on me for everything that goes wrong between us.
Oh, don't even start with that.
Don't try and change the subject. I am tired of your bullshit.
Well, maybe I don't love you anymore.
Oh. Oh, John, no.
Did you ever think of that?
I don't believe it.
You don't like thinking, do you? I never loved you for your mind, anyway.
I never thought I'd hear you say that.
I'm a bastard. Yes, you've mentioned it before.
Well, if that's the way it is, then.
And I wonder why the hell I ever got involved with you, too.
I guess there's no reason for me to come home tonight.
That's your problem, not mine.
Yes, I'm sure.
As far as I am concerned, this discussion is over. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Are you all right, Wendy?
Oh, yes. I'll be fine. Since I'm here with you.
Oh. That's so sweet of you.
I'm sorry, Robert. John is just so awful. Sometimes I...
Wish you'd never married him?
Yes.
I understand. When I wed Dana, I didn't realize I was marrying a raging, psychopathic, banshee bitch.
So you're saying you're a polygamist?
Well, I am here with you, aren't I?
Yes, and I'm so glad.
I love you.
I love you.
Oh, great timing. I just finished ordering. My work is done. You can pay.
I thought we were going Dutch. You planned this, right?
Oh, right. I was finished ordering 10 minutes ago, but asked everyone to wait in line till you came back from the bathroom. I forgot you wanted the white Zin, right?
What?
Oh, God, Eric, you're so easy. Calm down. Let's find a table. Your buttons are so easy to push. They almost go off by themselves.
One just did. I mean, I don't want to go on about this, but...
Yeah, like hell you don't.
Okay, well, first of all, the goddamn key for the bathroom was attached to some kind of leftover countertop laminate about the size of South Sisters Mountain and had a small chain attached between the key and this thing so that it was permanently unwieldy. Of course, they don't want you to leave it in the can, but when they make it too big to put in your pocket or under your arm, they force you to put it down, which increases the chances of leaving it on some disgusting surface in the bathroom. So when you do put it down, it becomes a portable petri dish that you can carry out close to the food and pass all those gross microbes on to the next guy. The whole premise is ridiculous. The purpose is to screen users so that heroin addicts don't go in and mix with the so-called normal customers, but that's stereotyping. William Burroughs was an addict, and he looked like my Uncle Norm, harmless as wet toast.
Maybe you just ought to hold it till you get home. I didn't know you were so neurotic.
And that's just the key. A key. A key to the fucking precious bathroom. Soon I'll have to flash my gold American Express card just to get the key. Is it worth it when I get in there? Is it the Carlton Bathroom Lounge? Are there hot towels and free bars of soap with the restaurant name etched in the face? Is there a cologne on the counter for me to freshen up? Is there a guy who will hand you a towel after you wash your hands as he regales you with the latest football scores? Is there a big leather chair where you can finish a smoke? No. No! I can barely get into the room because they tried to put a urinal and a toilet in the same room, a room the size of your average linen closet. And if anyone else had come in while I was engaged, they would have smashed my face into the tile and forced my body into the urinal, in which case I would have gone home to burn all my clothes.
Well, at least you didn't have to wait in line to get into this bathroom. At least you don't miss the first part of anything after the intermission because you're 47th in line in the women's restroom, which has 4 toilets. At least you don't have to sit on anything that the other 46 people did God knows what on before you got there. At least you were grossed out because the toilet paper you used to wipe the seat stuck to it and began to disintegrate by some agent of a biological nightmare. least you didn't discover that when you were finished, the partially hidden toilet paper roll had only 2 sheets left on it. At least you didn't have to disrobe enough to take the chance your clothes would touch that disgusting floor. At least you didn't have to smell diapers because, you know, even though they're changing stations in the men's room, 90% of slimy infants are changed by women. At least you didn't have to stand in line behind a parade of Tammy Faye Bakers who hog the only 2 sinks and mirrors while they lay on that makeup so thick till they look like Chinese opera divas. At least you didn't have to endure the umpteenth question about where you got that article of clothing, as if that disclosure would cause the interrogator to instantly fly to the thrift store in search of another. At least you weren't forced to make polite conversation about stupid details with people you hope to never see again. God, Eric, at least you were spared all that because we all know that straight men don't even acknowledge the existence of each other in the can unless they're drunk.
And even then we're laconic. The offhand, "Hey, dude," can be heard among the inebriated, and an occasional slur about "that blonde chick at the bar." But that's about it, except at dance club bathrooms, which is just an excuse for men to revisit the behavior of their Cro-Magnon ancestry before they pass out.
Well, pretend, if you can, that your bladder is the size of this vinegar jar. Pretend also that you aren't stupid enough to try and test its limits. So the one fact that is unshakable is that you'll need a toilet in your travels. So, of the essential facts known to mankind, one is that every person on the planet has to use plumbing, hopefully several times a day. And yet, to my constant amazement, I find that the facilities, as my mother used to say, are few and far between, hidden in the recesses of businesses, offices, restaurants, and stores. Plumbing is the least secret trade in the world. However, any building that, according to the capacity sign, can hold 530 has one commode, unmarked, out of sight, reverently reserved for an elite group who know the land or belong to the special sect who can enter. Certain malls have access code keypads on some of theirs for employees, since we all know that only employees have the need. And if you ask a sales clerk, they'll tell you the code. But then the line of people at the register know everything you'll do for the next 5 minutes. And I don't want anyone to make a picture, thank you. I feel like going up to one of them and saying, "Mommy, Cece has to go potty."
Well, then you'd have to disclose whether it's number one or number two. Did you ever notice that it is impossible to find a commode that isn't a commodity? People out for a walk in the city don't need to go once in a while, do they? You have to buy something to use the turlet. Bathrooms are for customers only. So peeing is a privilege one gets from an exchange of money. On some level, you can't pee before you pay. In civilized countries like Canada, the cities have public toilets so that you don't have to walk 17 blocks to take a leak or go into a store or buy something to relieve yourself. I can just imagine J. Worthington Bittelsdorf pulling back his gabardine coat and Armani suit coat under the Hawthorne Bridge because the store he was in didn't take American Express. I'm surprised there aren't rebel black market bathrooms hidden in alleys. Psst, hey, buddy, gotta take a leak? I could set you up with a nice American standard toilet and a sink with Delta faucets and fixtures for $10. Nobody's gotta know.
But alleys are bathrooms. You know the reason there aren't any real public bathrooms. They'd be so gross you wouldn't want to use them. Years ago, I remember there were some, and you could smell them even in the odoriferously numb dead of winter.
Well, God, the city would actually have to maintain them. What was I thinking? With all the annoyance of going to the bathroom out in public, it's a wonder we're brave enough to leave the house with our water bottles.
Here we are, the veal piccata and chardonnay.
That's me.
You must be the pasta with nut pesto and merlot.
I suppose I must be. Thank you.
Will there be anything else?
No, thanks. We're fine.
Can I get you some water?
Oh, God, no. Anything but that.
Yeah, we're fine. Thanks.
Where are you going?
Take a guess.
Don't forget the key.
After all this talk about public restrooms, which started out with your rant about that key, it's my painful duty to inform you that the women's restroom is left unlocked.
I love you, 28.
She is a real looker.
I don't believe in marriage.
I just wanted to meet some new people.
Hey, are you busy next Saturday?
We made ourselves for each other.
A friend of a friend?
Do you
I
come
love
here
you 131,072.
I love you 31. Touch me, I'm sick! I love you 262,144.
And then I found out he was gay.
So
I love you
524,000. I love you 33.
Oh, God, baby. Oh,
I love you 1,048,576.
Oh, yeah. I love you 35. I love you 36.
I love you 4,194,304. I love you 37.
I love you 38.
I hate that word partner. It sounds like a lawyer or an accountant or something.
Do you take this woman to be your lawful wedded wife?
My period's late.
I love you 39.
Do you take this man to be your awful wedded husband?
I love you 38.
The thing you have to remember is that the woman is never wrong.
I love you 37.
Do you take this woman out?
I love you 36.
Would you like to have this man taken out?
I love you 35.
You're my one true love.
I love you 34.
Do you take this woman lawfully?
So, did you make it past first base?
I hate you 3.
Do you buy this man takeout?
I hate you 5.
I love you 31.
Take me out to the ball game.
I hate you 6.
I love you 29.
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth,
the
whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I love you 27.
I don't have time to talk about that now.
Do you take drugs with your wife?
I love you 26.
I love you 25.
Do you do this, man?
I hate you 14.
I love you 24.
Do you take too long in the shower?
This isn't my underwear.
I love you 23.
I hate you 17.
I'm gonna sleep on the couch.
I love you 22.
With this ring, I be taken.
I hate you.
I'm not happy anymore. I love you 21.
Do you womanize?
I hate you 20.
I love you 20.
I hate you.
As long as you both can stand it.
I love you 19.
Ah, gentlemen, you know, there's nothing like a snifter to settle a meal, and a carefully rolled cigar to cap off an evening. This brandy was a gift from my late uncle, the Lord Harry, a courageous chap who braved it against those filthy Dutch Afrikaners of the Boer War. By Jove, the man stood some firm ground in his day.
There's to be a short game of whist, and then we're going up, Ralphie. For heaven's sake, don't be in here all night boring these chaps with your dreadful stories. We're going riding first thing, and I expect your bloated carcass in the saddle at sunup. Lord and Lady Halfmudgeon are expected for a cold lunch, and I won't have you looking like porridge oozing down the hall. Must I take the decanter?
Don't you worry about a thing, your ladyship. I'll look after him. We'll have him out of here in short order. And atop the noble steed tomorrow before the second aria of yon rooster.
Very reassuring, Corky, but who, pray tell, will look after you? Quis custodiat ipsos custodis? Tell you what, I leave it to these other gentlemen. You, sirs, are charged with the responsibility of rolling these two inebriated wastrels out on their ears at the stroke of 12. Good evening, gentlemen.
Evening.
Good night.
Good night. Good to be back at the Grange, boys. Excellent hunting. Fresh duck eggs, and my God, the air. Been in the family for years, this Grange. These stones have quite a story to tell. Back when I was a lad, we used to lock Nanny in the maid's closet and run through these corridors, staving off imaginary demons, Vikings, Presbyterians, dressed in cami neckers and cravats.
What a delightful boy you must have been, Lord Ralph. But tell me, was there not some story about real demons, genuine spirits that haunted this place? I'm sure everyone would like to know about.
Oh, well,
The ghosts of the Grange.
I don't know, Corky, these chaps don't... Well, all right, since you pressed me. Let's see, it was back in 1905, before my guard... Yes, that's it, and five. There was to be a hunting party down for the weekend. Some of the lads from my old campaign and a few of the mucky mucks from my wife's family business. Blighters, to a man. But it so happened that there was a terrific railway accident which delayed the whole group by 2 days. Lady Ralph was off to see our son Throckmorton in Calcutta, and they were traveling across India at the time, getting into God knows what. So I trundled down here with my niece, Angela Phipps Hughes Smythe Pepper Fizzington Jones. Angela was a delightful slip of a girl, bright and airy as a fresh rose, and pure as dawn. A few of the guests arrived, but most, as I say, were stuck in London. We'd come by carriage, you see. Give us a wee drop there, Percy. Gone a bit parched.
Was it the first night, Lord Orr?
Yes, well, we just finished eating, and I came in here with Reggie Flimbolton, and dear Angela, exhausted from the journey, of course, was on her way to bed with one of those mystery stories of which she was so fond. Reggie and I had a bit of a chat, don't you know? Wanted my advice, bit of a sticky wicket, only glad to help, don't you know, and all that. He toddled off like the cluck that he was, and I alone with the brandy. And an excellent read. Gibbon's Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, you know, or so I thought.
Good heavens, Lord R. You mean you weren't?
Indeed not. I was deep in volume 12, up to my moustaches, in carnage and debauching, when suddenly all the hairs on the back of my neck started tingling like the fox's tail just before the dogs. For across the balcony window a sinister figure darted so quickly that I almost doubted I'd seen it. But it was followed by a strange, terrifying, demonic cackle. My monocle dropped, along with a corona. I went to the window, but there was nothing save the harvest moon, mocking. Fortunately, the scar had not gone out.
Perhaps it was one of the servants?
Servants on the balcony? No, no, my lad. Besides, we'd always kept a skeleton crew here at the Grange. Half a dozen maids, a few footmen, the gardeners, manservants for the guests, drivers, cooks, and my own man, Oswald, whom, I'm sure, was snoring soundly immediately after supper, oblivious to my desires. Hardly anyone here, you see. I went to bed, startled, but not severely shaken. I'd seen Paris, after all.
Did you see more?
Patience, dear boy, all in good time. I'd settled into bed with Brandy and Gibbons, toes nestled in the spot where the bed warmer had been. Those cold October nights here in the country can be rather bracing. The great clock had just chimed 12 when I was aroused by a commotion in the hall. Suspicious of the maids, I rose from my bed and crept silently to the door. I didn't have the glass, and I'm practically blind without it, but I'd only the intention of sending them off on their way. I opened the door and, stepping out into the hall, faced those terrifying phantasms in semi-darkness. A pair of men's trousers, sans owner, were running down the hall by their own steam, braces and all, and chasing a glowing white apparition which I surmised instantly to be an uninvited guest from the beyond. It flowed and breezed like a mizzenmast sail in the wind, and moved with no regard for the properties of gravity until both it and the bodiless trousers disappeared round the corner.
By Jove, Governor, were you scared?
Scared? I was beside myself. I stood frozen in the hall, unable to move, riveted to the spot with terror. Finally, as if by their own accord, my feet began to move back into the bedroom. And suddenly there came, as if from the room above, a dreadful, eldritch, rhythmic thumping, not of this world. The chandelier rattled and shook as if the whole house were being rent by some invisible force. The beast, the demon, moaned in such a way that chilled me to the very marrow. I can tell you, for I knew that some fiendish, inhuman presence was trying to crawl its way from hell.
But, Gov, who was staying in the room above?
Angela, of course. At the time, I was convinced she'd heard nothing. I assumed the manifestation, even though sounding from above, betrayed a sinister creature in my very room. I assumed she could have no knowledge of my terror. What unhallowed thing had taken to the Grange, I knew not. But no terror I'd heretofore experienced equaled the hellish events played out before me that night. The torture seemed to go on forever, building to a cabalistic, thonic crescendo that was deafening.
I must have staggered to the window seat after sipping what was left of the brandy and passed out cold. For I awoke some time later, sitting uncomfortably embryonic and frozen to the bone. As I came to, there was one more diabolic tableau to which I was treated. I thought there was something moving in the garden, so I rubbed away some frost from the window, and indeed, I was right. An eerie light moved out across the garden, casting shadows on two translucent figures, vaguely human after a fashion, but not quite, I should think, even if I had my eyeglass. They moved and cavorted through their infernal incantations and gyrations, transversing the garden and through the gates, laughing all the while at our folly of supremacy as they disappeared behind the gardener's cottage.
Was there more? Was that it?
Yes, my lad, that was all. But it was quite enough. I returned to the comfort of my bed, shaken to my very soul, and fell into the sleep of the dead until Oswald strode in the next morning without so much as a by your leave and plopped my kippers on the table with tympanic verve. Blighter.
And so you say none other heard the fracas?
So I thought, Corky, young fellow, my lad, at first. But some weeks later, Angela came down with some strange ailment and took to her bed. Shortly after, when it was common knowledge that she was indisposed, the first and second footman resigned, and the gardener disappeared, and my own driver vanished without a trace.
Good Lord!
Exactly. I'm now convinced that they, too, were terrorized by this same manifestation of Satan's plaything, and it so altered their lives that they could not go on as before.
Whatever happened to the girl?
As I say, she took to her bed until, after a time, moving to Canada. My sister's husband's family, you know, made the fortunes and skins or something. Hardly legit, I say, but there you have it. Later, she gave birth to a little bastard out of wedlock. Some barbarian in the wilds of Canada probably savaged her. I never knew. All very hush, hush. Blood thicker than water, what? Lady Ralph keeps things from me. But I'm convinced to this day, and the reactions of Angela and the disappearance of the footman and the gardener and my driver supported, that we were treated to a visit from the other side. And oh, I'm certain of this as I am that golf is a holy game. We escaped that night with our lives, gentlemen, from a fate too grisly to imagine.
My stars, what a tale. Has the Grange been haunted since?
Only by you, Corky, me lad. Only by you. Throw another log on the fire, will you? More brandy, gents?
You're not listening.
This is what you wanted.
You love your 24. Job more than me.
I love you, 18.
Can't live with them. Can only fit one in the trunk of your car at a time.
I love you, 17.
She didn't come home last night.
You never call
I love
me.
You, 16.
I hate you, 22.
I love you, 15. 21. All they want is sex.
I hate you, 20.
I love you, 14.
I hate you, 19.
If you're there, would you please answer?
I love
answer?
You, 13.
We can still be
we
friends.
I hate you, 17. I love you, 12.
I hate
you, make
you,
me
16.
Happy.
It's a pretty nice place yet you have.
I hate you, 15.
I love you, 11. I hate you, 14.
I hate you. I love you, 10.
I hate you, 12.
I can't live like this.
I love you, 9.
11.
The thing you have to remember is that the man
I
is always
hate
right.
You,
I love you, 8.
Some people are meant to be single.
I hate
I'm
you,
I'm just
eight.
Not happy anymore.
I love you, 7.
I hate you, 7. I love you, 6.
I hate you, 6.
I'll miss you.
I love you, 5.
I hate you, 5. I love you, 4.
I hate you, 4. I love you, 3.
I hate you, 3. I love you, 2.
I hate you, 2. I love you.
I hate you. I don't love you.
I don't hate you.
Adrad Crane and his friend Isaac Tall strolled across the sandy Martian soil towards the dome in the distance, Sleepy Hollow.
Well, Isaac, I'll say this much about this planet. They don't have to decorate much for Halloween, do they?
Yeah, Adrad. The whole place is orange and black.
Iron oxide clods crunched under their boots, and a dusty wind lapped at their faceplates. Adrad cringed at the howling air, though he couldn't feel a thing, least of all a chill through his atmosuit. It was the temperature gauge on his sleeve that sent imagined shivers up his spine. A cold October evening on Mars, all right, at minus 63 degrees Celsius. The Terran colonist children had anxiously awaited All Hallows' Eve, it being the one day of the year their parents splurged precious credits on bucket loads of sweets. Round the domes they would go dressed up as their favorite hollow film stars or space pioneers, and uttering the classic refrain,
"Trick or treat! Trick or treat! Trick or treat!"
Except the question mark was usually dropped and turned into an exclamation point.
"Trick or treat! Trick or treat!
Trick or treat! Trick or treat!
Adrad Crane could still remember his treks through the brisk autumn air, the strangers at the door smiling. Of course, he had been on Earth then, or Terra, as political correctness would have it. On Mars, night was missing, as was the rustic roughing it of going out into the cold for sugar booty. In the soft inner ambience of the dome, it was never completely dark, and the scarcity of imported pumpkins seemed to dampen the festivities every year. But what was he complaining about? The holiday outside his childhood meant nothing to him.
I'd be better off making up Martian holidays rather than stealing those of Terra.
Isaac tapped his shoulder and pointed to a grove of trees at the outskirts of the dome. Adrad shrugged, exaggerating with his hand so Isaac could tell what he meant through his atmosuit. Yet Isaac pressed on, indicating the violet-trunked shapes looming to their left.
"Speak up, man. What is it?" I saw a light. It moved, too, like it was a lantern or something held above the ground."
"Where?"
"In the trees, skulking."
Adrad had never known Isaac during their 10 years of friendship to be hallucinational, or to be a frequenter of smuggled Terran narcotics, besides. Anyway, he knew those woods like the back of his hand. He was one of the team who first planted them.
"Probably just some too old trick-or-treater who's had too much to drink. Thinks he'll make it to the pubs of New London in his Atmos suit. We can tell the Dome Police if you'd like, Isaac."
Never mind. Sorry. Let's go to the party."
"Right. The fun and costumes lie ahead."
Partly he was not faking a lack of enthusiasm. There was a mask and cape waiting for him at the airlock. For the rest of the night, he would look like some demented royal. The woman at the costume shop where Isaac had purchased the guises had even thrown in a pair of gloves and mini binoculars for free once she had spotted Adrad's name on the billing ticket. She knew well of his dislike for Halloween. Everyone did.
"Have you heard the stories about the first Martian explorers?"
"Of course I have."
He tried to pry his friend away from staring vacantly into the woods, eventually picking Isaac up in the low gravity and pushing him toward the airlock.
"This may be Halloween, but ghosts aren't real. Robert Finley was the only one who never made it back to camp after the planet-wide dust storm in 25 Adrad. You know that's why they called the dome Sleepy Hollow. This was where he was lost, covered up by dune swells. And every mission preceding it claimed to have seen Robert Finley struggling to keep his buggy on course before it swallowed him up, I know. Well, I don't believe it. Never have. Just keep going. I want to get the party over with."
They went on, Isaac cooperating at last, though not taking his gaze from the bioengineered trees that were the last hope for terraforming Mars, the end of a series of failed experiments. The airlock opened and shuffled them inside with two great mechanical arms. Decompression swept over them like a fine-toothed comb. Adrad always hated this moment when the artificial gravity kicked in to simulate Terra. Abruptly, his shoulders and thighs would burden twice his weight, 117 kilos, then level out to the normal 1G. It was now that Adrad felt every one of his 52 years. How he wished he could stay skipping about at approximately 0.53 G for the rest of the time, yet the colonial government wouldn't have it.
Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to humble. It's time for
Superpower Smackdown.
Tonight, United States versus Iraq.
Superpower Smackdown is brought to you by Chevron. Thanks to us, things keep getting hotter. Ford Motor Company, because you can't have too big a car. And Halliburton. We'll lay pipe anywhere, anytime.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to another SmackDown Showdown. I'm Brent Brantley.
And I'm Nate LeBrant. We've got a great one here tonight. The long-awaited rematch between the mighty Eagles of the United States and those pesky Sodomites from Iraq.
And this crowd is really pumped.
Oh, you betcha. The American fans love to see a good smacking, especially against this opponent.
That's right. There's been a war of words going on between these two for a long time, Nate. For more on that, let's head downstairs to Melissa Alyssa Schmidt.
Thank you, Brant. I'm here with United States Field General Tommy Franks. What do you feel your side needs to do to prevail in this contest?
Well, we've got to stick to our game plan, be patient, stay within ourselves, and give 110%.
The Iraqi side has accused you of manipulating the officials and violating SmackDown rules. What do you say to that?
Well, it's really their side that's broken the rules, and that's what we've told the officials. All we want is to ensure that this is a fair contest, that's all.
Thanks for your time. Back to you, Brent.
And there's the horn.
You know what that means, Brent.
Time to give Iraq a superpower smack.
As expected, the U.S. has launched a massive blitz of missiles and aircraft at the vulnerable Iraqi defense.
They're looking to end this one early for sure, but oh my.
Wow.
The Iraqi butt pirates are rolling a squad of Scud missile launchers out of the Information Ministry building.
That's a bold strategy. The United States has got to counter that somehow. Oh, baby!
It's a double tomahawk!
That was devastating. What a move!
I think Melissa is making her way over there. What's the scoop, Melissa?
Well, there's all sorts of smoke and debris and people running for cover. I'm here with a man covered in blood. You've got to be very disappointed by the way things have started for your side. Do you think that your side can overcome this setback? Well, Brent, it looks like the Iraqis will have to dig deep to pull this one out.
Thank you, Melissa.
That Iraqi had better regain his focus because a detachment of Marines is driving the lane and heading straight into Baghdad.
Yes, indeed. They found a hole in the enemy line and they're running to daylight, Nate.
They could go all the way.
They've reached the presidential palace.
Wow, it's only a matter of time before the Iraqis throw in the towel. But wait! Whoa!
It's another double tomahawk.
Turn out the lights. The party's over.
We'll have to wait for the final body count, but this looks to be a resounding victory for the U.S.
They are just unstoppable, Brent. One of the greatest in the SmackDown history, right up there with the Mongols and the Huns.
And that is special company indeed. Well, that's all for this edition of Superpower SmackDown. Tune in next time when the United States takes on the mighty mullahs of Iran. Good night, folks.
Adrad sat through the celebration that night on a stool by the bar, mumbling his discontent to the barkeep. Isaac would sit down next to him from time to time, saying a few consoling words, patting him on the back, drinking a shot of Martian ale, Then he'd go off to dance with some pretty girl half his age. Adrad watched them. Witches, goblins, fairies, Frankensteins, all there dancing and frolicking in the good old wicked merriment. Streamers, orange, black, gold, red, flew through the air.
10 minutes to midnight.
10 minutes until I can escape from this mud hole.
He downed his ale as red as the dust of Mars and stood. Sober he was not, although not completely drunk either. Adrad stood and lifted his empty glass and shouted above the throbbing ghoul music, if nothing else, to play with their superstitions.
Say, everyone, aren't there full moons tonight?
Yes, Phobos and Deimos won't be in alignment like this for another 15 years.
So wouldn't this night be perfect for Robert Finley to haunt the woods outside Sleepy Hollow?
The swirling light ceased swirling. Isaac choked on his ale. Adrad looked from one horrified face to the next.
Well, well, you're all scientists here. What's so scary? It's a mere ghost story.
I know I saw something, and two couriers sent from New Berlin 2 days ago never got here, and they would have had to pass through the wood to get to the airlock. I tell you, we must beware Robert Finley's curse.
He never wanted people to settle Mars. He thought it should have been left in its ideal state. That's why people disappear at times. He's knocking us off one by one.
Look at yourselves. Robert Finley's been dead for 50 years. Why don't we go out and prove that I'm right?
No! The party was over for Adrad. Two strong men, both appropriately dressed as the Hulk, showed him the airlock. They made sure his Atmos suit was secure and left him there to clear his head. He was destined to see if Robert Finley was out there prowling after all. He walked, half-staggered, down the dirt road through the forest. The truth was, Adrad did believe. After all this time, he finally admitted to himself that he was afraid of the unknown, of spirits. He accused others of feeling the same simply to strengthen his own resolve in banishing these thoughts from himself. Besides, he was ashamed.
It's all so silly.
Robert Finley is a myth and a legend. Stories can't hurt you.
But here he was, sauntering along through the wood he swore to himself he would never set foot in again. The wind picked up. Sand blew across his faceplate. It was hard to see. Yet the light from the moons guided him, and he found his way to a bench about midway. The twin hulks had not confiscated his bottle of ale, so he took a couple of swigs by inserting the corked end into a port in the faceplate that fed the straw to his mouth. Anxiety peaked in him. He could almost hear Finley's last calm signal.
Heavy wind! Lots of sand! Must have been caused by a disturbance on the surface!
Adrad looked up. A bulge was forming in the Martian dust toward the end of Sleepy Hollow Wood. The mound heaved as if it were breathing. It grew and grew and grew. Adrad wanted to shout, to ward it off somehow, but he was transfixed on the uprising dirt. The sound of squealing rubber reverberated and rustled the trees. Leaves danced and spun with the wind, seemingly adding to the vortex-like environment. He could hear downshifting now, the deep groans of an engine. It was eager, terribly, terribly eager. Adrad managed to get to his feet when it broke the surface. The bottle in his hand fell to the ground and shattered. The buggy beaten and weathered. The man, suit torn and ragged, faceplate smashed. Adrad squinted, trying to see a face behind the broken glass. No, this apparition was headless, save for the suit part that remained there stubbornly. It clutched at the lever and the wheel spun wildly. Sand, like in a storm, blew behind it. A single headlight illuminated the forest. Adrad ran. He turned and fled toward the airlock. The buggy went in hot pursuit. Adrad could hear it gaining on him, puffing and wheezing. He was half jumping because of his bulky suit. The wind beat him back. The woods creaked malevolently. The Martian soil was soft under his boots. Everything said,
"Cannot escape. Cannot escape. Cannot escape. Cannot escape.
he glanced over his shoulder and saw that it wielded a pickaxe. Adrad kept running. The buggy's chrome bumper nudged him. He nearly fell, then caught himself. The airlock was close. Adrad's heart leapt. Suddenly, a stirring wave of red dirt opened like a pair of lips and swallowed him. They found Adrad late the next morning when a dome patroller saw a finger sticking up from the ground. The body was removed from the sand. As police carried Adrad away, a detective questioned some of the partygoers.
Was he ill?
No.
Did he have a tendency to drink?
No. Maybe he forgot to take his psycho drugs, if he used them.
No.
Any soil instability that might have dragged him under? Quicksand and such?
Robert Finley got him, I know it!
The detective didn't even bother to write it down on his notepad. But Isaac had his doubts.
This damn hill is gonna be the death of me. I wish we could change colors like the leaves each fall. That dying seems glorious every year. If we could feel the seasons the way the trees feel the change, I'm sure we'd be better prepared for what's coming, and not in denial. We might even learn to appreciate our place in it. Our distance from nature these days has kept us from noticing the cycle of Earth. Let's see, what else do I have to do for the yard sale next week? Signs are finished. Hope I have enough to make it look like a real sale. I know people tend to drive by if there isn't enough junk. At least I don't have to fill one of those sprawling suburban driveways with stuff. And I'll keep the candle holders in the bedroom. Even though I have too many, I'm not ready to unload them yet. Sentimental idiot. I'll give that cat thing to Pat at work. She likes that kind of kitsch. When the candle gets down to the eyes, that's too creepy for me. Not conducive to lovemaking. Not many people out here. I'm glad I came riding this early. The smell of all that wet bark and pine needles near the path will be gone when the sun is up. This path through the trees. Trees in the city. All that concrete and paving. All these ancient woods. This is the edge of my everyday routine, the corner of my known world. Beaverton doesn't count. That's only one day a week, anyway. From here, the center would be the home. From here, the thought of my known daily universe is the home, the basic concept of my home. And if this is the outer edge of my known daily universe, the outer edge, then...
Hi.
Then the centering is a vigil. How you doing?
I'm cool. Beautiful out here this morning, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't usually get out this early.
Later, this path up here can be a fucking nightmare. You ride here all the time?
Not really. Once in a while on the weekends. I have normal routes, but...
Yeah, me too. But I try to come up here or up to Mount Tabor once a month. Good for the legs. Killer on the thighs.
Yeah, this is a goddamn workout.
So how far are you going?
Well, I'm following a particular plan. Not sure how far it'll be, but I've planned the whole day for it.
If you don't mind me asking, what plan?
It's gonna sound a bit weird.
Yeah, none of my business, really. Sorry.
No, that's okay. It's just that I'm traveling from the outer edge of my everyday commute back home in semi-concentric circles. Well, sort of, depending on the streets. But I'll be riding around toward the house, figuratively looking at it from all angles as I get closer. I'm not sure if that makes any sense to you. It's a kind of mid-city pilgrimage to explore the world close to my home.
Interesting.
I'm sure from an outsider's point of view it sounds a little obsessive or perverse. but I'm getting a lot of exercise.
Sounds a little like a Cheever story.
Are you thinking of the swimmer? I can see that, but I haven't lost my family and my fortune. And my neighbors, as far as I know, don't hate me.
So what made you want to do this instead of sitting in a bistro drinking latte on a Saturday morning?
I need to stop a minute. I'm going to tie a shoelace.
Okay. You mind if I ride with you for a short way?
No, that's fine. I expected to be alone, but...
Well, it won't be long.
Okay. Where are you going?
Just meandering. Thought I'd end up going across one of the bridges. So, why?
Okay, I'm ready. Let's go. Lately, for about a year, I've been reevaluating what I need to sustain a nurturing, healthy psychology. I've been trying to find the essential parts of my life that I couldn't do without.
Back to the basics, huh?
Yep, I knew you were going to say that. All my friends say the same thing. Plus, they think I spend too much time alone. One of the luxuries of not having a partner is that you can self-indulgently explore the minutiae of your own psyche ad nauseum. I'm not crazy. It's just that in the last year, watching the world coming apart with a velocity that I've never seen, I've been wondering exactly what I consider necessity. I've been wondering how to make sense of the chaotic routine people, myself included, live in, and the mess of the world. It hit me that if I focus on the most absolute needs, I might be able to get a handle on how to look at the rest of the world. If I could rid myself of the clutter, physical and psychological, maybe I would develop more an abstract spiritual relationship with all the actions I perform. That sounds kind of monastic, but that's not really what I mean.
No, it's propitious that we should meet this morning.
Really?
Well, yeah. I live alone, too. And like you, I see an unraveling thread in the universe. I'm wondering if physicists are going to tell us soon that the universe is beginning to contract. I read too much world news, I know. The ramifications of each microcosmic vicious act of mankind are growing exponentially beyond my ability to even comprehend solutions. Like you, I'm thinking that some kind of sacrifice is necessary. Admit I hadn't thought of getting rid of my stuff.
Up to a point. As long as I can afford it, I'm going to have decent cheese the rest of my life. There's a limit.
That's right. There's no reason to drink shitty coffee, ever.
Right. I know that I'm just another overstuffed American trying to justify his own Western extravagance. I need a new way of looking at things. Sometimes I can't figure out. I can't wrap my head around doing anything for a future that I just can't fucking see. Last week, I made a dentist appointment for 11 months from now. Later, I thought, what arrogance. Do we still think we have the luxury of planning for a year in advance?
Yeah, I've got a mortgage. I've planned for 30 years. Luckily, they tell me, luckily, if I die, the insurance will pay for it.
There's a comfort. I don't want to go on about this. It's my private neurosis. But lately, I can't help feeling that if I can sacrifice some of the crap... Ah, shit. Maybe nothing will change except my perspective. I've been more passionate about this than anything else in the last couple years. I don't know what else to do. I'm no Mother Teresa.
No, I agree. I think some kind of sacrifice is the thing. I still can't shake free of the religious thing, even though I don't have much religion. I'm feeling like if there was a sacrifice, a willing, conscious sacrifice, that would affect the big bubble, the whole universe. The universe wouldn't even notice at first. There might not even be a ripple, but sooner or later, I was raised to think that each thing we did somehow did make a change, even undetectable. Sacrifice is one of the last noble gestures. It's selfishly unselfish.
Aren't you afraid that the noble gesture might merely be a grand act of justification?
It might be for some. It won't be for me. I wonder what brought us together. This is just the coincidence that makes me think I'm right.
We won't know if we're deluding ourselves. We can't get that distance.
Yeah. We think we're right because we believe in it. It's a novelty here. True belief.
What are you doing?
This is where I leave you.
Right here in the middle of the bridge?
Yeah. Go on, I'm gonna stay here for a bit.
You don't have to do it this way. There are other ways. We could come up with another plan.
You can see this is the way for me, can't you? Your way is fine, wonderful for you. I have to do this. I can feel the truth in it. It's my contribution.
There's got to be a more... Why don't you just wait a while? We'll talk.
Nah, I'm all talked out. I've thought it through. You know I've decided.
I know. Is everything taken care of? I mean...
Yeah. All the details are fine, all worked out. Listen, I'm glad I met you. Our meeting, it was meant to be, don't you think?
True. In all the world, of all the people, two of us on that path. I'm glad we met, too. Well, there's... Goodbye. I guess... Goodbye.
Goodbye. Good luck to you.
Hey. I hope like hell you're right.
Thank you for listening to the Sudden Radio Project's 10th edition, Rated X. Contributors include Margaret Luger, Leslie Dews, Orion Gray, Todd Greblow, Deborah Perry, John Severn, Emily Young, Andrew Stelzer, Sarah Thompson, and Audrey Rose. Welcome to the world, little one. Tune in to KBOO's Radio Theater Hour every Monday night from 11 to midnight. Theme music for the Sudden Radio Project is composed by J.S. Zamishnik and performed by the Montalto Motion Picture Orchestra. Sudden Radio Project number 11 will arrive on your doorstep on December 30th. Stay tuned.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Becoming Dr. Ruth, produced by Triangle Theater. Starting February 5th through the 28th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza at 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. Becoming Dr. Ruth tells the story of the outrageous and iconic Dr. Ruth Westheimer and the journey she took from fleeing the Nazis to her struggle as a single mother to coming to America and becoming a renowned sex therapist. Again, that's Becoming Dr. Ruth, produced by Triangle Productions, from February 5th through the 28th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Creative Music Guild's annual fundraiser called Untoward. Friday, February 28th, at Hipbone Studios in Portland. This year, Untoward features performances by Marcus Fisher, Ali Hankins, Reed Wallsmith and Joe Cunningham of Blue Cranes, and Taka Yamamoto. Again, that's Untoward. Saturday, February 28th, 7 p.m. at Hipbone Studios, 1847 East Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Stay tuned for the Tiki Cha-Cha Club.
Glad to see you all aboard.
Olé, olé, it's show time.
In the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room,
all the birds sing word and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room.
Welcome to our tropical hideaway, you lucky people, you. If we weren't in the show starting right away, we